May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. I met a traveler from an antique land. Not me personally, I should say, this is a poem. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them, on the sand, half sunk a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read, which yet survive stamped on these lifeless things, the hand that mocked them and the heart that fed. And on the pedestal these words appear, my name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. So the disciples roll up to the temple in Jerusalem like the bumpkins that they are, gawking at the sights of the big city. As Jesus walks out of the temple, having just said something wise about a poor widow who gave away her last two pennies there, one of the disciples says, wow, Rabbi, have you seen how big these stones are? And the buildings, they're really big. You might be surprised at the disciples' surprise. After all, there were three great festivals a year when faithful Jews were expected to come to Jerusalem to offer sacrifices at the temple. Galilee is not so far away. It would have been normal to do what Jesus' parents did and come down for a few festivals a year and for big family occasions. We hear stories of Jesus and his parents coming to the temple not only after his birth, but during his childhood. This disciple, you might think, may not be the most pious person, and yet there he is following Jesus. Maybe he's stayed home the last few years, and in the meantime, the stones, they've gotten so big. But to be fair, the temple had been under construction for years, a 40-something year project by this point, refurbished and rebuilt from what it was, just a single building, into a giant complex during the reign of Herod the Great, the one from the Christmas story. Over the course of Jesus' life, this set of buildings had expanded such that there was not only the temple, a small building about the size of this church, but a whole temple mount, originally a hill and then a giant walled complex that stretches roughly from here over to the Whole Foods parking lot and then up past the monument in the other direction, a quarter of the size of the ancient city of Jerusalem, the largest religious complex in the entire ancient world. So, fair enough. If you've seen this kind of growth and construction and change over the course of your life, maybe the answer is, what large buildings? But Jesus only looks at him and says, do you see these great buildings? Well, yeah, you can imagine the disciple thinking to himself, I was just saying how big they are. But Jesus isn't done. Do you see these large buildings? Not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down. Which is a downer. But Jesus was right. Or, particularly pedantic scholars of the Bible might tell you that Jesus is not exactly right. That there are a few stones that remain one upon another at what we now call the Western Wall or the Wailing Wall, which was the western wall of that gigantic temple complex, now reduced to a part of one wall, of one edge of it, which really just proves Jesus' point. Not one stone will be remaining upon another. Doesn't necessarily mean 100%, but all was thrown down. Just a few decades after his birth, at the end of a failed revolt against Rome, the Roman armies destroyed the temple, and 100 years later, they destroyed the whole city and exiled the people from it. But of course, Rome itself was thrown down soon enough. All will be thrown down doesn't just apply to the stones of that temple. The Roman Republic had already fallen apart when Jesus says this. The old gods would be next as Roman temples were replaced with Christian churches where people ironically worshipped a man as God who had been executed by their ancestors. And then the empire itself collapsed, and only the ruins of Rome remained among its ancient glory, amid the medieval cities that rose up in the crumbling remains of those aqueducts and colosseums and so on. And it went through a cycle as nations and kingdoms rose and rose and fell again and again. Human history, in fact, at least so far, is a pretty much unbroken cycle of things being thrown down and new things being reborn from the ruins. Every civilization seems to think that it is the greatest one that has yet existed, and that the end of history is surely near, and everyone has been wrong. It's declined and fallen in turn. So Jesus seems to be right. Sooner or later, all will be thrown down. Percy Bysshe Shelley knew this when he wrote the poem with which I began. Shelley was inspired by tales of ancient Egypt, which was only just then in the early 19th century being rediscovered in a way. Ozymandias is a Greek form of the name of Pharaoh Ramses II, who really was one of the great figures in human history, probably the most powerful person to walk the earth anywhere over the course of 500 years or so, just that it was 3,500 years ago. Shelley envisions a statue worthy of the man, a form that would have towered over the crowds with his look of stern command. The pharaohs were worshipped as gods, and Ramses was one of the greatest ones, so the statue addresses any who might see it with words that challenge their attempted challenge to his power and his might. My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. As two centuries of English teachers have pointed out, there's a double meaning here. The statue sends a message to the conquered lands and subjugated peoples whom Ramses wants to impress. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. No one could ever be as powerful as me. But there's a message for later times as well. Look on my works, ye mighty, the inscription says. See the ruins of my kingdom, forgotten for millennia and buried in the sand. See my shattered visage, half buried in a dune, next to a couple of legs, without a torso to be found. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair, because if this is what remains of the great Pharaoh Ramses II, what will remain of you in 3,500 years? Is that too much? It's a nice day outside. I think that there are a couple of ways to take this. One less good and one maybe good. The one that's less good, I think, is to respond with nihilistic despair, right? I'm sorry to say, your life will one day come to an end. This civilization will come to an end. This building into which so much care and energy and attention have been poured for 183 and a half years now will one day be thrown down. So what's the point, you might ask? It's all just going to end up buried in the sand. Well, there's half of an answer in our reading from Daniel today, and it's a pretty good one. It's the promise that the world that we see is not the end. That when we are forgotten after 100 or 1,000 years, we are remembered still by God. That the world may go through anguish time and time again, but in the end, many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. And those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the sky. And you know what? We have Michael to thank, says Daniel. The measure of our greatness, according to this vision of the future, is not how large our monuments or our buildings are, not the size of the stones. It's not whether we, like Ramses, still inspire fear in the nations and peoples of the world. It's the fact that we still receive God's love thousands of years beyond the grave, however weak or mighty, however small or large we are. But there's a second half to this good news as well, and it's not off in heaven. It's right here, among what we have built. The disciples come to Jesus privately and say, "So what's the deal? When will this happen? Can you give us a sign or a hint?" And Jesus says, "Beware that no one leads you astray. You may hear of wars and rumors of wars, but the end is still to come. because this is all just the beginning of the birth pangs. I myself have never given birth, but I'm told that it's often worth it in the end, and I'm certainly grateful for having been born. Yes, the temple was cast down, and so was ancient Rome, but something else emerged, and that thing fell, and something else emerged, and that thing fell, and something else emerged, and here we are, living always among the ruins of the past, but living in our own buildings, in the communities and the lives and the places that we have built. Yes, they will end, but the end, Jesus tells us, is not now. It's still to come. And we live in that gap between the warning that it will all be thrown down and the time when it actually is. That's human life. Chaos and catastrophe recur. Everything we build will be destroyed, but that's not a reason not to build it. That's exactly why we must build it and rebuild it and rebuild it again. Because those buildings are beautiful and those stones are large. Because those relationships give us life and those communities teach us how to love. Because when all of our monuments have crumbled into the dust, nothing is left but the memories of the things that we have done and the legacy that those actions have left behind. And even in some of our most anguishing times, something new is being born. In fact, nothing is ever born in any other way. So yes, one day all this will be thrown down, with my apologies to the building committee. Our greatest achievements will collapse into the sand. So will our worst mistakes, for what it's worth. And yes, one day we all will shine like stars, and the glory of that heavenly life will reflect the depth of God's great love. But it is also true that the things that we build here matter for as long as they remain. They're temporary and transient, but so is everything. The past has crumbled away. The future is yet to come. And here we are, right here, in the things we've built ourselves and with one another, and we live in them. Because while we can try to remember the past and we can pray for a better future, we can start building a beautiful present together right now. In the name of the one holy and undivided Trinity, amen.